Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cafeteria Christian, a podcast for people who like Jesus, but aren't so sure about some of his friends.
I'm Natalia Turfa.
I'm Nora McInerney. And this is our first episode, okay? This is our first episode, so just bear with us.
This is too high.
A little too high.
It's all right.
Little too high.
Okay. Little too. That's little way better.
High.
Way better.
Little too high. Little too high. There
we go. We don't know what we're doing yet, but we're figuring it out.
We hope it's going into this box. We don't know.
The magic
box. Don't know. We don't know.
Oh, all right. So, first episode,
who are we and why are we here? I'm Nora McInerney. Who are you?
I'm Natalia Turfa.
Natalia Turfa. You are a Christian weirdo I met on the internet.
Great. That's really how I want to be known. Although, let me just say that I prefer that to expert, because that title makes me very nervous.
You're an expert in being a Christian weirdo, which I'm into. I'm Nora McInerney. My friend here is
Natalia Turfa.
And we are Cafeteria Christian, a podcast about, a podcast for people who are just trying their best, okay?
Who like Jesus, maybe kind of, sort of. Mm-hmm.
A podcast for people who think Jesus is cool, but aren't sure about his friends.
I like it. Okay. I like it.
Aren't so sure about his friends. And honestly, why should you be? I mean, I don't know how much you know about history, but Christians have like kind of a spotty track record.
Spotty. Maybe spotty is too light.
Spotty might be too light because they have fudged up a good portion of the world. I think the sun does not set on a part of the world that Christianity hasn't meddled in. Is that fair to say?
That is so fair to say.
We have some stuff to answer for, and we'll get into that on several other episodes, but Cafeteria Christian came from, it's a pejorative. My father used it to, I think he was trying to insult me when I was raised Catholic, personally. What,
you? Me too.
Weird. Yeah.
This could be the Recovering Catholic podcast.
It could be.
We don't want to exclude anybody.
No, Catholics are welcome here. All are welcome. All are welcome here. But Cafeteria Christian was an insult used by my dad when I was maybe in my early 20s and had graduated from a Catholic university and was not actively going to Mass, as Catholics call it, and was not really actively participating in my faith. And I was sort of just, it's like, have you been to your college cafeteria recently? Hopefully not, unless you're in college. They frown. Don't cheat that meal plan, okay? If you're a grown-up,
also, it's not really that good.
It's not that
great.
You
can do so much better than that.
But in a college cafeteria or some high school cafeterias, look, in cafeterias in general, you take a tray and you look through all the options and you take what you want and you leave the rest. And my father, who was very traditional, thought that was no way to build a faith, right? If you're Catholic, you're just a Catholic and you believe what Catholics believe. And so he was trying to insult me, but I thought, doesn't that sound kind of genius? Like, why wouldn't you have a bespoke version of it? Shouldn't it be that personal? Why in the world would I just take it all? Why would I take it all?
And there should be things we leave behind. There should be parts of the Bible that we can look at and say, you know what? That was maybe applicable, 2,000 years ago, but we've come kind of a long way since then, and maybe we should get with the times. So
right.
I'm also not afraid of being known as a cafeteria Christian. I think there is actually nothing wrong with this title, and I am all about reclaiming it for good, because I think we all do this in some way or another as Christians. Doesn't matter what denomination you are or how you were raised, we all sort of have parts of Christianity that we're like, oh, I really like that thing. Also, I really don't like that part. Mm-hmm. And we all kind of do that. And most of the time, I would say, this is maybe a little general, but most of the time people are like, that Jesus guy was pretty cool, but all of the follower people, maybe not so cool.
Yeah.
And I'd like to reclaim that too and remind people that Jesus said some really great things, and people have fudged it up quite often, and to remind us what being a follower of Christ actually looks like in the world and what it means to just try to live a decent life respecting humans and loving people. And I think that's hard, and so that's why we mess it up. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's possible and we can do it.
How did you get from being what was Christianity like for you growing up?
Oh, well, I grew up Catholic. We went to the highest high church, Catholic church in the land. I grew up by St. John's University. So we went to the big church, the one with the, have you ever seen that big cement architecture thing?
Yeah.
So that's where I grew up going to church. And my family sat in the front row because that is what we did. And so full view, front row seat to all the monks my whole life. And I know the monks, priests in general, don't have that great of a reputation, but I grew up with some of the loveliest pseudo fathers and uncles kind of all over the place, and they were great. And that was a place I felt really comfortable, but also they didn't answer questions and they didn't really encourage questions. And so as a kid, you could feel that and feel like the things you're wondering about aren't welcome here. And so that was really hard. I think I was curious and I didn't necessarily feel like it was a place I could ask questions. You know, you didn't get given a Bible. So here at the church I work at, we give kids Bibles when they're baptized and we start them right off as a baby and say, like, here, dig into this thing and learn about God. And as Catholics, we didn't get a Bible. I never got handed a Bible. And you're just supposed to trust the person in front of you that's like holy, apparently, and like a Jesus guy to teach you the stuff you're supposed to know and like trust that. The stuff that you're supposed to believe.
Yeah.
And if you had questions about it, it was pretty quickly shot down. And so I feel like I believed in God and I had good experiences as a kid growing up with people of faith. But also I just didn't feel like it was enough and that they didn't answer things that I felt like were pretty big questions. And that was frustrating. And then when I went to college, I went to a Lutheran college and kind of learned a little bit more about grace and was really captured by that idea of like, I don't have to do anything for this love and like don't have to confess to a priest behind a box. Like that was really weird to me as a kid, and I would make up stuff because I couldn't think of sins I had done to confess, and I would make up. It was really weird. I mean, I'm sure I hit my brother, so probably.
Sure, yeah, put me down for two hittings of my brother. Probably some sassin.
I mean, I definitely disrespected my parents.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, for sure, since the last time I was in here. So just to learn about grace in that setting was really beautiful for me. And then I kind of dabbled in lots of other denominations. I went to a Baptist church when I was in college, and after college, I went to a kind of non-denominational but sort of Presbyterian community and helped at a Lutheran church. I just kind of went all over the place, and I kept coming back to this God of grace, and that felt like it really fit what I wanted to believe and also what I thought was right, where a God who looked at people and just said, I love you, I love you, I love you, that's it, to me was really compelling in much more way than like, I love you, but you're going to hell. To me, that was like, ooh, that feels icky and arbitrary and creepy. Like, there's nothing I can do, or there's lots of stuff I have to do. It just felt icky. And so I kept on coming back to this grace-filled God, and that's kind of where I fell into the Lutheran church.
How did your family react to you becoming a Lutheran?
Oh, I have such a good story for this. So we were sitting at Easter at my grandmother's, who is staunchly Catholic. I think she would have preferred I become a nun so they could like brag on one more generation of having a nun. She used to say, because one of her sisters was a nun, which was very traditional. If you were Catholic, one person in your family kind of went into the priesthood, right? That's how it worked. And she would be like, we have one of those. Mm. We have a nun. And so I remember saying like, oh, I got a job in the Lutheran church. I was a youth director first. So I got this this youth director position at a Lutheran church. And she literally stopped and turned and talked to the person next to her and, like, didn't keep talking to me. And I remember being like, oh.
I mean, I'm a nun. I'm a Catholic nun.
I think I'm going to, yeah, to I feel nun the calling. School. I don't know what that is.
I just got called. I'm going to, I'm nunning hard forever.
And I felt like I should have gotten props for being maybe the one grandkid who was still going to church. And I felt like that should be good enough. But no, it was, it didn't count. It didn't count.
It didn't count.
So eventually she's been dead for a couple of years now, but eventually she kind of came around to, like, I think I would have made a good pastor. She kind of said, like, about herself. And I think she would have loved to do it. And she sort of felt like those Catholics need to get on board with women in leadership. She kind of came around to that when she was at her most honest and sassy messages. She was getting older.
I feel like right before you die, you get a lot of
clarity.
A lot of clarity. Also, you stop caring so much about so many things. So I look forward to that time in my life. I look forward.
I feel like I'm already there. Can I be more sassy?
I feel maybe I'm about to die because my 30s, my mid 30s, have definitely brought me to that point, which is I was also raised Catholic, but I would say mostly I was raised. I mean, being Catholic just seemed like a cultural choice or a cultural. Being Catholic seemed less like a choice and more like a culture to belong to, but very loosely, right? Because I cannot say that my family went to church consistently, that when we went, we even went to the same place. Sometimes we would choose based on whichever had the shortest mass. So we'd sometimes go downtown to we're here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. If you're looking for a quick one, quick in and out microwave mass, as we called it, because there was no singing and you get in and out in 40 minutes. Nice. Our Lady of Lourdes Saturday nights. So, you know, we would just kind of go to, it was like a gym membership, I would say, like a universal gym membership, pop into whatever Catholic church you are near. And that counts as being religious. My family never, ever talked about it. So you would hear a homily. I would have literally no idea what the priest was talking about at all. It's like, what, I don't even know if they ever broke it down, tried to, you know, explain it to the congregation. I certainly use that time mostly to just zone out.
For sure.
Count things in the church, like number of bald heads, number of blue jackets. Then at some point I would get nervous that God could see my thoughts in a thought bubble or that even the priest could, and then they would know I was zoning out. So
I couldn't do that because I was in the front row. I could never, like,
we always slid in the back.
Smart.
About 4 to 6 minutes into the into mass, which is currently my MO as well.
For real.
Yeah. So I, you know, but I just always sort of accepted it. Like, yes, I'm a Catholic. Yes, I probably believe something. I didn't know a lot of the details. I remember my high school boyfriend asking me what the first book of the Bible was and his mother saying, don't ask her such stupid questions. And I was so thankful for her because I did not know the first book of the Bible and was sitting there like, yeah, how dare you ask me such a stupid question? Google didn't exist. So I was like,
you could,
Mortimer, what is the first book of the Bible? Something, start number one, chapter one, book one?
Book one.
Well, let's say it at the same time. One, two, three. So I had no idea. I also had never read a Bible. Hadn't really, I mean, the most that I'd learned was in my Catholic high school. We had this amazing class at my high school was run by Christian Brothers, which is a form of Catholic.
Are they Jesuits?
No, they're similar though, where they're just people who are devoted to, they're men, who are devoted to education. And certainly also not without their problems. We'll definitely have to get into that. But I was taught world religions by a man named Brother Andrew. Why? I can't believe I'm forgetting his name because he was like literally the most formative teacher I ever had. Oh my God. All the De La Salle kids right now are screaming it at me.
You're going to remember as
I'm going
to
remember
on,
as
and you're going to shout it out. It's fine.
I took a world religions class and Brother David, the most formidable teacher that any of us had ever had, more rigorous than any college professor I had, taught us world religions. And though he was a Catholic, I remember him saying, this is all paths to the same summit. So we learned that about Buddhism, about Islam. We learned it about Judaism. We learned it about Hinduism. We learned it about Christianity. And that is really what stuck with me. All paths to the same summit. All paths to the same summit. I went to a Catholic university, again, just because it seemed like the thing to do. Like, well, I mean, I already went K through 12. Why not? Why not cap it off?
Keep going.
You know? But really, I knew that I believed in God. I did not feel anything. I never felt anything. And I look back and I'm like, I don't think that anybody ever was like, oh yeah, God just loves you. That was such a novel idea to learn well into my 30s. But it always felt like it was something that I had to earn through a series of tasks, that it could be taken away from me, that it was highly conditional. And when I looked around at the faith that I had been brought up in, again, loosely, it did not align with who I am and like the values that I have and that I want to give to my children, which is that women are people.
What?
Look, this is wild. It's about to get very controversial. Women.
You are so progressive.
Right? Women could do the same things a man could do. Hear me out on this. Right?
What?
Yeah, that gay people are people.
What?
I'm about to get crazy here. Okay. that Ooh. other faiths are completely valid and are all many paths to the same summit. So could I subscribe to an organization that to me did not align with the kind of world that I want to see? And that was a personal choice that I made. I didn't really think it needed to be like announced. I wasn't going to church anyway. So I just continued to not attend.
To not go to church.
I continued to not attend. I had married a man named Aaron Permort, who I adored, who had also, I think he was baptized Catholic. His family wasn't super religious. I'm speaking for the entire family. I know some of you are. But he definitely wasn't. He just wasn't. And we did baptize our child in the Catholic Church because, in Aaron's words, what if I'm wrong? Right? What if? Okay, little insurance policy. And Aaron was sick. He had brain cancer. And before he died, my father died of cancer 6 weeks before. And we all, you know, gathered around my dad's bed and we did last rites with a Catholic priest, which is really beautiful. Like, got to give it to the Catholics. Do they do ritual or what?
That's so beautiful.
And something that I truly, like, sort of adored about growing up was like, I might not have understood it, but I knew I was a part of something very serious and difficult to understand. So in a way, it made me feel like intellectual by proxy. Like, look, I don't know what's going on, but there's incense.
It smells and bells,
it
man.
Smells and bells. Okay, it works. It worked on me. And my dad did had last rites, and we prayed the two prayers I know, by the way, which I also had never, like, just freestyled a prayer. I thought, like, prayers, I mean, the Our Father and the Hail Mary, those were truly, that's it.
Yeah.
And the priest was like, does anyone have a prayer they want to say? And I was like, what? We just said all the prayers we know. Why are you putting us
these
on the...
These are the prayers.
And I, like, laser-eyed him, like, why, in front of my dying dad, would you put us on blast like this? We don't know any prayers.
This is your job.
This is your job.
You're the expert.
We don't know any prayers. I was like, no, we covered it. Let's move on to the dying portion of this evening. We left my dad's deathbed, and Aaron that night was like, I want that. I want to do that. Like, I don't know when I'm going to die, but I want something like that. And so I don't know if maybe he believed in something at the end. I do think, I will say, watching two people very close to me die, that although I had been definitely holding God and holding any faith at all at arm's length at the closest while Aaron was sick and while Aaron was dying and while my dad was dying, that watching someone die, there's just like no doubt in my mind that there's God in that moment, mm-hmm. and in this world, and So we did do last rites for Aaron, and he did not burst into flames. And we said the prayers we knew. The priest knew better than to ask me if I wanted to say any additional prayers. Yeah, I would say, you know, I'm 35 now. Aaron died when I was 31. And even through like the year after his death, when people were like, you know, oh, like, you know, God is watching over you. Oh, you're just, oh, you're really, you know, don't you?
Some of that stuff is not helpful.
Yeah, but I mean, I did not see God as a part of any of that. And now I can look back and see how God was a part of it, but not in any of the platitudinal, don't know if it's a word, but now it is, ways that I was used to, you know, hearing about God. And so how do we get to this table? We're getting there, dear listener. I had published a book after Aaron died, and Natalia, unbeknownst to me,
P.S. Can we, since at the start we only introduced me as a Christian weirdo.
Christian
I am
weirdo.
A pastor.
That's all. Look, doesn't matter what your title is.
I have been trained. I'm a pastor. I happen to work at a Lutheran church where we read Nora's book as a group in our cancer support group that we had here. So there is, I mean, I will fully take on the title of Christian weirdo. That is fine. But also.
Context. So Natalia, a professional Christian weirdo, had apparently read my book. I had not read her book. I did not know who she was. She had tweeted at me a couple times. I would like click through to her bio and it was like, you know, Jesus person. I was like, no. And, you know, honestly, Christians just had a bad reputation in my mind. I was like, I just don't need a person to tell me everything happens for a reason. I don't need a person telling me that, like, this was God's plan. I don't need a person to tell me, like, who's in and who's out. Like, I'm sure you're fine, but no thank you. And then one of Natalia's friends came up to me at some event and handed me a book, and I misplaced it. And then I found it a while later and I read it. I had never read, regular old Christians will know this word, a devotional. new vocab word to me. Okay. Had never. I'm going to describe your book now.
That's great.
Okay. Her book is called Uplift. There's a subtitle. I was just looking around the office for it. I don't see it. Oh, there we go. Okay. A little book of God's promises to give hope and uplift your soul. So I set this near the garbage, but not in it.
Wow, thanks.
I was like, no, thank you. No, thank you. Like, God, how about not? What if I didn't read this? Well, one day I didn't have anything else to do. So I cracked it open. You're supposed to read, you know, one page maybe a day or one page a week. Guess what I did? I read the whole thing because it's only 151 pages long. So I read the whole thing and I was like, whoa, this was really good. And this seems like the kind of God that I would like. And this seems like the kind of Christian I would like to be. So I followed Natalia. I did it. I hit that follow button. I did not regret it. Then we had a meal together. And then I went to her church for Christmas. If you're going to try out a church, do it on Christmas when everyone's got their best foot forward. when everyone's really going for it.
They're really going for it. And you can't really beat candlelight on Christmas Eve anyway. So
yeah, you really can't.
The caveat on the book is if somebody had asked me 4 years ago, Natalia, you're going to write a book, I'd be like, yeah, I love writing. Writing's my favorite. And they'd be like, it's going to be a devotional. And I would have been like, spit take all over the place.
Yeah, what is a devotional from a professional Christian weirdo's perspective? Tell me.
I mean, they're supposed to be like a little, it's like to make the Bible more accessible, right? And so that you're not looking at this huge book and being like, where do I go and what should I read? But you're pulling out little bits of the Bible and sort of reflecting on it over a page or two or a couple pages. Mm-hmm. Most of the devotionals that I had read had been either too light and fluffy and full of those cheesy platitudes that I just can't handle, or they went too deep too fast and they weren't accessible to people. So like a regular everyday person opening it up could be like, I don't know what this person is saying. Like a Catholic sermon, by the way. So I really wanted to write something for my little group of cancer support people that was accessible and hopeful and not bad theology, which seemed to be a tall order. And so I couldn't find anything. So I started writing them for this little group, and it kind of grew into a bigger thing. So they shared it, and people kept on reading it and asking me to write more, and eventually got connected and wrote a book. And I think the thing I like most about the community that's kind of come out of Uplift is that it's a group of people being like, we want to be this kind of Christian. Just like you said, we want to be the kind of Christian that's not a jerk, but also not spouting crap at people or fluffy stuff. We want to be real and honest about, like, life sucks and it's really hard. And, you know, just praying cancer away isn't always possible for everyone. And that's not a, like a good game plan for your future. And so
it's not medically advised.
Not medically advisable. Yeah. So I wanted something honest and real that could still help on those really bad days where you could open something up on a really bad day and look at the titles and say, okay, this is the thing I need. I need light, or I need hope on this day. And you could read a short little thing that kind of helped you in that way. Is it perfect? No, but that's okay, because nobody is, and I'm not. And I have loved what's come out of that book, and I've loved that people have been interested in that kind of Christianity. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad that my friend, props to Meg, for giving you that book, because I'm the worst at self-promotion maybe in the history of the world. And I'm like, hey, I wrote this book, and will you read it?
Don't read it. No. I just don't.
Nope,
no, it's fine. That's how I feel. When people are like, what do you do? I'm like, nothing. I'm nothing. I don't do anything.
I'm in sales.
Yeah. Yeah. I just say I work in accounting, and then nobody asks me any questions.
I manage a small nonprofit.
Yeah. I just, what do you do? Yeah. I just deflect immediately. Yeah. I'm like, what am I doing today?
I don't say I'm a pastor, because then people, you see in their head, they go back over, did I swear? Did I say anything inappropriate? Am I going to hell? That's what they think right away.
I wouldn't want to be a pastor, frankly. Seems like a lot of work. It really does. It seems like a lot of work. But I would love to make people that nervous. That seems like a lot of power. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
So that's how we got to this table.
That's how we got to this table. We are making this podcast because I think that there is nothing better than being a cafeteria Christian. I think with your faith system and with your politics and with your with this podcast too, everything that you approach in life, you should do with a critical eye, and you should take what you like and leave the rest. And actually, not just leave the rest, but like give some constructive feedback to the kitchen staff. This metaphor is maybe not going to thread all the way through, and I'm okay with that.
We'll try.
We're going to try with it. Cafeteria Christian is produced by our friend Matthew Ian Fleming. He's a pastor, so I feel like we should call him Pastor Matthew Ian Fleming.
The Reverend Matthew Ian Fleming.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We are a co-production with the Altar Guild Network.
And you can find us at cafeteriachristian.club.
And at Cafeteria Christian, basically everywhere else. Not Twitter, that place sucks.
Don't go there.
We're not going to Twitter. Not gonna do it. Not gonna do it.
We don't want to be a part of that place.
No. No. Unsubscribe. But not from this podcast.
Subscribe, share, tell your friends.
Yeah. You know why people always say that at the end of podcasts? You know why at the end of every podcast you listen to, they're like, please, if you listen to this podcast and you like it, tell someone. It's because it actually does matter. That's how most people find podcasts, is through their friends. So if you like this podcast, tell your friends. And if you hate it, tell your enemies.
And if you're one of those people who likes Jesus but isn't sure about his friends, and you know other people who also like Jesus but aren't sure about some of his friends, then definitely pass this along. And we can have more of us cafeteria Christians who are taking what we like and leaving the rest.